Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Justin from Beyond the Uniform. Each week, I try to talk to a veteran and hear about their career path, advice they'd give to active duty personnel, thinking of getting out of the military, and lessons they've learned along the way. This week, I'm really excited. I speak with Rob Miller, who is in the medical devices industry. What I really enjoy about talking with Rob is, first of all, he went through a recruiting agency called the Lucas Group, and it's something I didn't know about prior to this call as much, and he really lays it out well in terms of the advantages and how to consider working with a recruiter and what they bring to the table. He also talks about an executive MBA program he did while working and he completed that at Wharton, and points out a lot of advantages about going to school while working and being able to apply what you're learning on the job. Quick background on Rob. He was prior enlisted in the Marine Corps before going to the Naval Academy, went back to the Marine Corps for 5 years, and then transitioned directly out into medical devices. So if you are considering medical devices, recruiting, MBA, or executive MBA, this is a great interview for you. As always, on the website, beyondtheuniform.io, I break down the interview by time. So if you want to jump around to the areas that specifically interest you, you can do that. So here's Rob Miller on medical devices and executive MBA. Rob, it's great to meet you. I'm excited to learn more about your background and really appreciate your time on this.
No problem. I'm glad to help.
So just starting off, I'd love to learn more about your background, where you grew up, your experience at the Naval Academy and in the Marine Corps.
Sure. I'm the oldest of two. I have a little sister from the suburbs of Charlotte, North Carolina. Pretty much leave it to Beaver household. Church and school and not getting in trouble until I could drive. And after high school, I took my undisciplined self to the University of North Carolina for a semester and did poorly. And prior to my report card arriving at my house, decided to enlist in the Marine Corps.
Yep.
So I enlisted.
That's a preventative action, the first strike before there's the parental backlash.
Yeah, it's it also got me out of town, so it solved a couple of problems.
Yep.
And I think that I kind of needed that catalyst because, you know, I wasn't really heading down a road that I could expect myself to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. So I did kind of need some help. My parents were fantastic growing up, and they did so much for me, and I'm very grateful to them now. But I was able to not learn certain lessons. Fortunately for them, my sister turned out just about perfect, and they were able to hang their hat there while I was away from North Carolina. So I enlisted and was a technician on some communications equipment and a Stinger missile system. I did a little over 3 years on the enlisted side prior to attending the academy, but I was able to pull my GPA back up at some college classes once I got to my first unit in Camp Pendleton. I had a really great time. My platoon was tight. Everyone lived within real close proximity since we were basically a block of rooms. It's similar to the Naval Academy, except for it's outside instead of inside. Hmm. And since I was in between LA and San Diego, outside wasn't a problem at any point in the year. Hmm. I enjoyed my time a lot. I actually got my acceptance letter to the Naval Academy about 30 days late in some crap hole town in Iraq. I can remember opening it in May, and it said I needed to return it by April 15th. So I was able to get a phone call in to speak with someone to let them know that, you know, I wasn't blowing anybody off. I did go through all the work of submitting an application, which is like preparing for a Supreme Court appeal or something. It's a gigantic package of paperwork to be filled out. You know, that wasn't just an exercise in futility. I did want to attend. I got back in the middle of June and reported to Annapolis the end of June, handed in my alphas, and they handed me back the pajamas.
Yeah, those whitewashes.
Yep. And I think that part of the early academy experience was a little bit easier for me. It was also a little bit frustrating at times.
I was always envious of the prior enlisted because that, you know, a couple of years of real world experience, most of them in my class, I was 2002, but most of them just seemed to really zero in on what they wanted to do and just had a little bit of real world experience to balance everything out. And I was envious of the focus they had, whereas, you know, coming straight from high school, for me, it was a big adjustment and just kind of a year of figuring things out while the dust settled. So I can imagine it would also be frustrating to go from the real military and then have some kid that's probably younger than you yelling at you who doesn't have that perspective. So I imagine there's some challenges there too.
Yeah. I think that the overcoming that was basically was just realizing that I was being a little bit selfish at the time. And the things that were easy for me were not easy for other people all the time. So, you know, instead of helping my roommates, I think early on it was, you know, I kind of looked at them as a burden and, you know, it's sink or swim or whatever, but I didn't really accept the teamwork nature of plebe summer and, probably for the first couple weeks. And then, you know, once you turn from you know, trying to do everything for yourself and worrying about yourself to trying to teach the guys the few things that I do know, it changed the dynamic a lot, and it ended up paying off huge because I had two 17-year-old roommates and I was 22.
Oh man,
freshman year, and they were both so much smarter than me. Like I needed. We all did engineering, and I needed their help with studying and with you know, trying to provide a different perspective and context for the problems as they were presented to me in class. So it was really fortunate that I pulled my head out of my ass pretty early on in plebe summer. Mm.
And you graduated 2007. You decided to go back in the Marine Corps. Was that a pretty easy decision, or was there any
yeah.
playing around with other communities?
No, I that was the all I'd done, all I had thought of. I don't know that I really considered anything else for, you know, for better or worse.
Prime Bachman, sorry, 01.
And Bachman, you know, while I was enlisted, I had always wanted to be I had the goal to become an officer and graduate college in one of the programs that they offered. The Naval Academy ended up being where I landed.
And you served Marine Corps through 2012. I was curious about when did you make the decision that you were going to transition out of the military, and how did you approach that decision?
So it ended up being almost impulsive because I got into almost a game of chicken with the monitor. You know, when you look at the landscape of the opportunities in the Marine Corps. I just spent the last 3 years at the 2nd Intel Battalion, and I was looking for an opportunity to grow and kind of the challenge, something new. My now wife and I had been dating for a long time. She was living in Alexandria, and there were a number of like not envious positions available at the Pentagon. And he wanted to send me from, I think it was 2nd Intel to 1-9, which would have been like two streets over. Mm. And I would have been doing just about the same job. My fit reps were always exceptional. Almost my entire career, I had a 300 PFT, and I kind of thought that I was in a position where my performance should have been awarded an opportunity to do. And I wasn't stuck on one thing. I was open to a number of different opportunities, but they would just have to provide some upside and a new challenge. And if they were closer to my girlfriend at the time, that would have been great. Mm. I told him if he was going to do that, I was going to drop papers, and he blinked he didn't blink and I didn't blink. And luckily I had 78 days of leave. Mm. Cause I hadn't been taking much vacation for whatever reason for the last 4 years. So I had time to make the transition smoothly, even though I hadn't given it much consideration before that. Yep. So I probably thought that I was going to retire up until March.
Yeah.
March, the early March of 2012.
And you separated in May, right? May of
2012? I think June 1st.
June 1st, so just about just a couple months to prepare for that.
Right.
And what about when you were, I guess when you did get out, did you choose to do reserves, and how did you approach that decision?
I think I was frustrated. The participation in the inactive, was just about mandatory. I didn't have any reason not to do that. There was no obligation, or additional requirement. But if I had to start a new life, and a new career and learn something entirely different than what I'd known my entire adult life, I decided that I didn't want to be attached to a reserve unit.
Yep. I wanted to be able to embrace fully that new life and that new career.
Right. And then I think that the geography of it was important too. I didn't want to have to be requesting special permission so that I didn't have to travel across the coast or from coast to coast to participate in a reserve unit that accepted my MOS.
Yep. Yep.
Or some equivalent. So I kind of went from career military to dedicated civilian overnight.
Yep.
But it turned out that, not too terribly much changed about the approach in general. I think that the skills from the Marine Corps, particularly like the leadership, the time management, the prioritization, the ability to, and this wasn't a strong suit for me, but to be tactful, and to try and be a little bit influential about how to get the things that to secure items that your guys need, or that resources that may be scarce that you kind of have to lobby for, and it's a zero sum game. So if you get them, somebody else doesn't. Mm. So there's a lot of kind of not necessarily politicking, but you know, it, to be diplomatic and part of the team at large, and you know, speaking with subordinates and seniors, all of those administrative and communicative skills and characteristics, you know, those are the things that you lean on almost all day.
Yeah. And when you made that transition, so you went straight from the Marine Corps into Drummond Scientific, and I'm curious for especially for a military audience, how would you describe Drummond, and how would you describe, I guess, the medical devices industry in general?
So Drummond is unique. It's a family-run company. It's probably had just under 100 guys and gals when I got here, and we're up to probably 117 now. And it's lean without trying at the top. It's focused around support for the frontline production workers, which is, you know, very similar to all of the Marine Corps MOSs being designed to and focused as supporting elements of the infantry, kind of. So I didn't think about that comparison until just now, but it seems to fit now that I mention it. So it's the medical device industry in general is difficult because one of the things that we don't deal with a lot is the regulatory requirements. So it can be, you know, developing a new product can be an expensive and super long proposition with, you know, gigantic R&D costs and what seems like, you know, forever to get anything done.
I bet there's a lot of red tape, a lot of regulations. I imagine in some ways, because you had mentioned when you had to fill out the paperwork for the Naval Academy, how cumbersome that was. So I imagine with the military that's there's probably some parallels between all of the regulation and process for medical devices and what you would experience in the military. Is that true, or how do you feel about that?
Well, I think that in general, in the medical device industry, that is probably accurate. I don't have as much experience with FDA compliance. We have a couple of clean rooms, and we have some ISO compliance things that are fairly strict, but they're relatively easy to manage on the paperwork side. So I think that our company will steer clear from FDA regulated R&D because of the risk and uncertainty associated with it, and try and focus on instead the support side of a company will make a new diagnostic platform, and that will have to be FDA approved and go through all of the testing and compliance and specificity and sensitivity measurements and to make sure that the test is what it is or was it what it says it is and that it's effective. And we'll sell components of it.
Yep.
So that we don't have to deal with the paperwork other than invoicing. And I think that it's maybe a less competitive side of it because, I think that there is probably 30 Fortune 500 companies all elbowing for the same space in the medical device industry. Yep. And hopefully whoever wins, we're able to sell to them.
Yep.
Which
How?
it,
Oh,
go
sorry.
ahead.
I was going to say, putting yourself back in March 2012, you kind of unexpectedly choose to leave the Marine Corps. How did you go about finding your first job, and how did you decide on Drummond?
So I had the help of Lucas Group. So it's one of the JO placement companies, and they provided the platform to put yourself in front of, 10 different companies that did 10 different things. And I had not given it enough thought to really know what I wanted to be when I grew up. I'm not sure that I know any better at this point, but, I was really looking for the best fit. And I think that at the time, I'm not sure how I would have described it, but, I think that it was, now it's kind of an organizational thing, where the hierarchy and, kind of parallels to the chain of command, and the ability to have some latitude, and maybe some of the cussing and the blue collar, chip on the shoulder, was something that I appreciated also.
Yeah.
So the shareholders here do a real nice job taking care of the production workers, and they don't look to pay the $12 an hour salary, or they're fairly generous, and return they get a higher caliber frontline worker who's capable of more and has a better attention to detail and is more conscientious. So it we're probably not, we don't send anything out of the country for assembly or for production runs. We do everything here. And we don't try and cut corners. And while I didn't know all of that at the time, but from my time with the company during the interview process, it was pretty clear that there was a commitment to the employees, and then a level of reciprocity that was obvious.
I imagine there's a lot of overlap there from the Marine Corps of taking care of your people and a strong team environment, and it sounds like a lot of integrity that I imagine connected in some way in those interviews. And I'm familiar with the Lucas Group, but I actually haven't spoken with anyone yet on the show about that. What did you like? I mean, what were like kind of the what was the basic process with the Lucas Group? And I'm curious kind of like what you liked about that and anything that you thought could be improved in working with a recruiting agency like Lucas Group.
Ooh. So it was a little bit intimidating because everyone that's participating in the event for the day. So 20 other guys similarly situated, you are all collected in a hotel, and the companies that you're interviewing with basically shotgun out to different rooms, and then you rotate in time slots, and they have a 30-minute window to get to know you, which is pretty short period. And I think I did 11 interviews that day.
Oh man, that's brutal. I feel like anything over 3 or 4 in a day is a lot. So 11 is pretty intense.
So I think at the end of the day, I remember being confused. A couple of interviews, I had like very superficial knowledge of the company, or what city they were in. So I wasn't sure what I was looking for. So I wasn't really in a position to complain. That might have been like, kind of the best opportunity for me to gain some exposure to what was out there at the time.
Oh, I believe
But
that. Yeah. I love that saying that the best decisions are made in parallel rather than in series. And being able to directly compare two things, I think our minds are better at that. So I imagine sitting through 11 of these, the cultural fit or the personal connection or these subtle things start to stick out more of like, hey, for whatever reason, I didn't like these five, but I did like these six. I can see a lot of advantages to doing it in that way. And did the Lucas Group give you any preparation prior to that, or how did you prepare for all of these different interviews?
right. So the day before we had kind of briefs on each of them, and you get a 2-page summary of the company, the industry, the kind of the customers, the position, the responsibilities, and sometimes compensation was included in there. And I think that at a certain point, most of that stuff just starts to look the same. So I can remember two other companies that I interviewed with that day. And at the end of it, you rank them. And they were. The three that I remember were the three that I ranked, and I had second interviews with all three and had job offers from all three.
Were they all medical devices, or do you remember the industries that the other some of the others
Yeah,
were in?
so one was precision machined metal fabrication. They'd made parts for the automotive and motorcycle industry. The other was a specialty treatment company that did like vapor deposition on metals or ceramic coating for like for propellers. So cavitation, they would try and harden propellers with a vapor deposition. And I can remember, thinking that I'd never heard of any of these things, and thinking that I really don't know how to make the decision based on the opportunity, because I'm not really in a position to judge the market or to judge the company. Or one of the companies was publicly traded, the other two are private, and it ended up coming down to which guy did I want to work for, or which group did I want to work for? So, I just thought that I had a better connection with the president here, and that was my last interview of the day with was Drummond, and I was their last interview of the day. So I had 11, but I believe the president and vice president had 10,
Man.
and I was worn, and they were worn too. And I can remember almost choking on my tongue, because after the 25 or 30 minutes that we had a conversation, and there was a very brief pause and some dead space, and the president of the company said, "Well, get the fuck out."
Oh man.
And the door shut behind me, and I was standing in the hallway, and I was like, "What just happened?"
That's amazing. And for those who might be considering a recruiting group, It sounds like there's a lot of advantages in terms of preparation and just exposure of getting you very quickly in front of a variety of companies and helping you maybe figure out what opportunities are out there. Are there any downsides that you can think of if someone's thinking of going this route?
Obviously the it's very surface level. It's not real deep. You have to make a decision with probably, less than ideal amount of information. And I think that for a lot of people, that's not that big of a deal, because I think that if you join the military, you're a little bit impulsive anyway, probably. So maybe we are comfortable accepting our snap judgments. But I think that the best thing that someone can do is start the process early, so that really that does a few things. A, you end up telling the same story for the first, 6.5 minutes of the interview, and you need to have that story down, and you need to have a few anecdotes that can display the characteristics or character traits that you would lean on, what you bring to the table. And I couldn't tell you what they were now, but I remember I had three stories, and you could ask me any three questions, and those three stories I could spin to respond appropriately.
Oh yeah. And I think that's so powerful. I think that's, I completely agree with you, of really having a well-crafted story that portrays different attributes that would be applicable. And I think that's part of the art of the interview, where you like you said, you can take that question and funnel it towards the story that you have prepared. I think that's a very clever way to approach that.
Yes. So maybe by the time I was in my 11th interview, they had I had figured it out, so it sounded good to them also. But I would definitely recommend putting yourself in a position where you have. So I think that most of these types of meetings are quarterly. That if you can have a couple of them rather than go with to one and that's your what you're hoping to come away from a job with that one. You don't want to, put yourself in that position.
There wasn't an obligation from the Lucas Group to accept one of these offers. It was more just a time pressure that where this was, it was going to be another 3 months or so until the next event. Yeah. So you wanted to choose one from this specific event. Is that right?
I don't think that I was in any hurry, because when I started, I was still on leave.
Okay.
Like I was still on my terminal leave.
Yeah.
So I can remember after my after completing the interview process here, I spent the entire day with management, and then I went around to all the departments and talked to the production workers, to the supervisors. And I was excited, actually, for my first day. I was ready.
I see what you're saying, though, but it's like, it sounds like in your case, you were able to get that information. But for someone considering going this route, if they're able to get a couple iterations and a couple rounds of these days of interviews, it just gives them more exposure, more practice, and probably a higher probability of finding a good fit for them.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And I think that you also, with anything, if, once you practice it a little bit, you're just much better with it and more comfortable. And maybe the second one you have a better chance to be yourself, so you can find a better fit from the other side trying to meet you.
Yep. No, I agree. It's like everything else. It's just getting a couple. At bats under your belt to get in the swing of things and kind of get used to it. And then you're much more comfortable and more able to focus on the dynamics rather than this is a very new process in which you're thinking more about the stories
right.
and all the other moving pieces.
Yeah, you want it to be more substance, and you want to be able to kind of run what they're saying through some sort of filter and analysis in your head and be able to think about it rather than concentrate on, oh crap, what am I going to say next?
Yeah. And you're currently an operations manager. I was curious to learn more about what does your day-to-day life look like in terms of hours, the team that you work with, kind of what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Sure. So that's a pretty long list. So I start the day. I get here usually between 5 and 6:30 in the morning, and I'll go through and do kind of a rounds type thing where I'll check the inventory, check the works in progress, check with the supervisors and see who needs what, make sure that I understand what in our production lines, what's moving, what product is where, and then kind of balance that off of the schedule and the delivery dates and who's screaming and who forgot to put their purchase order in, and which company do I have to make happiest. That was an all-day thing initially. Subsequently, I've been able to decentralize a lot of that. Good communication has led to the ability to have the supervisors make more of those decisions, monitor more of those dynamics, and that way I can focus on more of the other things that have been passed on to me. So when I was hired, it was the operations manager was the title, and except for the president and the vice president, I don't think anyone else had title. Our one sales guy likes to call himself the global something or other czar. I kind of picture, what I do now as more of a director. Because I'm more on the other side of business now than I when I started. So the role, once the proficiency and the communication and the expectations and the all of the things that you generate as a platoon commander with your platoon sergeant, once that's in place and you need 5 minutes to talk to him every day or her every day, well, that frees up another, 45 minutes for every 5 minutes that you're there.
Yep.
So I started doing business development, did a lot of kind of account management and some trying to generate customer acquisition. Then once I got some customers, do some product development and try and figure out some ways to work with the engineering department to increase capacity, improve efficiency. These in the industry, these would all be like, Six Sigma quality stuff or lean manufacturing protocols or I can't even remember what the other one is right now, but
I'm blanking out as well.
So they're just common sense things that we do well now, that are they just make sense. They're just more fluid. It's rather than having specifically identified and defined roles and tasks, and you give people responsibility and some ownership, and you'll find out who wants it, and you'll find out who wants to excel, and then those are the people that are supervisors.
What I like about when you're describing your role in operations, it sounds like it's something where the Marine Corps and the Naval Academy prepared you pretty well in terms of a lot of diversity of roles in management, in kind of juggling lots of tasks, figuring things out on the job. And it also seems like you're, you know, in operations, you're uniquely in a spot where you're exposed to all the different facets of the business, because you talked about business development and kind of the sales side of customer acquisition. You kind of talked about the client service aspect of managing these accounts and the engineering side. And so it sounds like an ideal starting point in terms of just getting your hands in every piece of the business and starting to understand all the different functional groups of what makes a company run.
Yeah, that's very well put. Yeah, that's very close to how it went. And, some of the opportunities I had to be a little bit more aggressive with, just because, it's a, 75-year-old family run business. You're trying to overcome inertia is, sometimes, is tough, but once you have some success, the amount of rope that you're afforded is increasing until you fall on your face.
One of the things I was interested in learning about was and you spoke earlier about leadership and diplomacy and these attributes from the military. I was wondering, in what ways do you think the military prepared you best for what you're doing right now? And in what ways did you have to catch up? In what ways did you feel a little bit less prepared in your current role?
So I think that from the being prepared side, I think that answer is probably easier, and it's that you're forced into those situations where you have to prioritize and take action quickly. You're not indecisive. The Marine Corps edict is the 80% plan executed with a little bit of violence and a lot of aggression. Is better than the 100% plan almost every time, because as soon as bullet number one flies by, 100% plan's out the window.
Yep.
So I think that particularly in the operations position, that is helpful, but the other thing that is very similar, and this might be more with this company than elsewhere, but the chain of command and the ownership piece with your supervisors. So you want to be able to hold them accountable. You don't want to micromanage. You have to be able to ask them for something and walk away. And then the diplomacy side is a little bit tougher with subordinates, because in the Marine Corps you tend to be harder with your subordinates, and maybe not rightfully so, but I'm thinking of not how I behaved towards my subordinates, but just how I was treated as a subordinate.
I definitely relate with that of the leadership, I think, is great from the military. And then I've just found that the management side is different than a lot of the examples I saw and a lot of what I experienced. And I had, some adjustments to do there and just differences in managing people in the civilian world versus in the military.
Right. And I think that was, that was more trying to influence their behavior without being, directly telling them to do. They have to want to do it, and you have to be able to step away and let them do it their way, especially if you expect to be afforded that opportunity yourself.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I want to be respectful of your time. I know that we're kind of running up to the end here. You know, one thing I did want to just ask about briefly, if you have time, is I know you did the executive MBA program at Wharton, and I was just curious to learn about that experience of going to school while working as well, and just kind of how that experience was.
Sure. I had a really, really good experience. I learned a lot. My friends from the Naval Academy are my, my closest friends. And when we see each other, it could have been three years, but we'll pick up with the same conversation. And I always thought that was unique and maybe, just something that the Naval Academy held. But it turns out that the relationship with some of my friends from Wharton is similar. And I think it probably has to do with hardship. So everyone is working 60 hours a week and taking a full class load and, traveling and have families and, trying to continue life while also adding this, whole giant piece that's supposed to pay off in the long run. So I ended up having a really positive experience. I learned a ton. And a lot of it was quickly applicable to the business. So that's probably one of the biggest benefits of doing the MBA while you're at work, is that, if you have the opportunity and maybe I was fortunate in that regard. If you have the opportunity to take that exposure and parlay it into experience before you forget it or you have to replace that with the next thing that you're going to be tested on, it's much more impactful. And I think that it may not show up on a, test score, but I think that you, in the aggregate, you'll learn more.
I completely agree. I mean, I went straight to business school, and so not having had prior work experience in the civilian world and, just having it be strictly school, in so many ways it was like a theoretical exercise. But I could imagine, had I layered on top of that working and being able to, on a daily basis, apply a lot of the theory and academic knowledge I was learning in a real world situation, I just think that, like, the way that I learn, I think I would have learned in a much deeper and more lasting way. And so I can see some advantages to doing that executive approach.
Yeah. And I think that the other benefit that, that I experienced was the people that are there, they are freaking impressive, man. And I think that this might be common, but there's a little bit of a inferiority complex on sometimes you when you're talking to people, you're like, whoa, that's what you did today. You're the general counsel for someone running for president. I don't know how it is that you found time to make it up to Philly from D.C., much less, read 1,000 pages in the last 2 weeks.
Love that, too, because it seems like with these MBA programs, you're learning just as much from your peer set and their experience as you are from the classroom and the instruction. And that's such a powerful component to get even more exposure to different industries and approaches to work, and it's a cool and practical way to learn.
And our professors actually encouraged that. They were really awesome about soliciting class experience that was directly related. I can remember that we had some of the doctors and stuff that were in the class. They would ask for like specific medical opinion for, you know, like if we were doing a case study on, I think the one I'm thinking of was for a knee joint replacement. The one of the guys in our class happened to be an orthopedic surgeon, and he does knees.
Man, it's a very different perspective than I was exposed to in the military, for sure.
Yeah,
and for someone on active duty who's considering doing an executive MBA, is there any advice you'd give them in considering that, or you know, broadly or Wharton specifically?
It's on active duty and coming off, or that's going to the plans to stay on active duty?
Actually either.
So I think that if you stay on active duty, that you have to be concerned with the lack of flexibility that the military can occasionally have. I think that you also have to go out of your way to try and find those moments where you can apply something directly to your work, just so that it is more meaningful, and that you obviously want to grow and build. So it's something that you have to kind of explicitly concentrate on. And then for me, Wharton was a decision that it was, you know, well, provided I was accepted, it was an easy one to make, because I live right outside of Philadelphia. It's not a bad commute, and the degree awarded is just MBA. It's not classified as an executive MBA. So I think that, you know, I'm not really bothered by the executive part, but for, you know, people that are concerned about the dilution of the name brand, that was something that for the expense, I thought that was worth it.
Awesome.
So between the GI Bill and my company picked up the other half of the tuition, it was really just not a very difficult decision for me.
Oh man, to be able to get that quality of degree from that quality of institution for free is unbelievable. And as someone still shouldering a grad school debt, I'm envious of the financial position you're in. That's what makes an enormous difference.
Yes.
Well, I know that we're over on time. I really appreciate your time on this. And
yeah, no problem.
Yeah, great chatting
with you.
You
and hope I'll be able to provide something of value.
Yeah,
purpose,
no, I
really... Purpose.
All right, that's all for today. A couple quick announcements. On the website, beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find links to anything relevant that Rob mentioned. I'll put that there in case you want to learn more. Also, I'm always interested in speaking to people who have either unique or popular career paths or particularly relevant advice for veterans considering that transition into civilian life. If you know of anyone, or if you yourself would like to talk with me, drop me a note at beyondtheuniform.io. And always love feedback. If you have any recommendations for how I can make this more usable for veterans in helping them arm them with that knowledge that will help benefit them in that transition, drop me a note as well. Thanks, and see you next week.